Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're going to be taking a look at an Aberdeen investment trust. We're going to be focusing on Aberdeen UK Smaller Companies Growth Trust. And to do that, we're very kindly joined by Abby Glennie, who is the Deputy Head of Smaller Companies at Aberdeen. Abby, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
No, thank you for having me.
So this is a particularly interesting time to be discussing this trust, particularly from a political standpoint. There's a lot happening in the UK. There's, of course, deep value in UK equities, particularly at the smaller end of the market. And we're going to be discussing that in some detail and where you see opportunities within that universe, Abby. But before we get into it, please, would you be able to give us an introduction, first of all, to yourself as well as the trust, please?
Okay, of course. So my name is Abby Glennie, and I manage the Aberdeen Small Companies Growth Trust along with my co-manager, Amanda Yeaman. So we are part of the smaller companies team at Aberdeen. Throughout the team, we run UK, European and global small cap products, and we run those all under exactly the same investment process.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So for this podcast, we're going to start with looking at the strategy and key themes within the trust and the portfolio. And then we're going to move on and discuss some individual names a little bit later on. So to get us started, Abby, it would be good to hear a little bit about the strategy, how you go about selecting individual equities for the portfolio. Is it a top-down strategy? Is it bottom-up? What does the concentration look like within the portfolio?
Okay, no problem. So within the team, we run everything under the same investment process. And that investment process has been running for around 25 years in the UK smaller companies space. That was really originally started by a gentleman named Harry Nimmo, who Amanda and I ran the trust with before Harry retired a few years ago. So we've been involved in the trust for a number of years now. Now, that process is focused around what we define as quality, growth, and momentum. And we can talk more about what we mean by those characteristics if you want. But that has been consistent. And you know, we have run that investment process now, we think, through five different economic cycles. It's very much a bottom-up stock picking focus. You know, obviously, there has to be some awareness of the environment around us and macro. And obviously, that has been more challenging in more recent years. But really, we are about finding great quality growth momentum, smaller companies, running our winners. We tend to have our portfolio concentration of around sort of 50 stocks on average across the portfolio. We would hold the sort of largest positions, tend to sit around the sort of 4.5% level, maybe up to 5%. We tend to not hold things much larger than 5%. And we also look to not have a big long tail of holdings. So that's where that sort of 50 stock concentration comes into place.
Thank you. And I do actually want to pick up, as you mentioned there, your strategy is focused around quality growth and momentum. I'm sure listeners to this will have a good understanding of growth and momentum, but I'm sure they will be interested to hear the key metrics and measures that you use to judge quality in a company.
Of course. So I think there's a number of different things, and some of them are qualitative and some of them are quantitative. So, you know, when we're looking at certain measures, we look at things like Z score, we look at things like Pachoisky score, we look at balance sheet strength, we look at margin sustainability. But I think a lot of the quality aspects are sort of softer touch elements. So you're trying to judge the quality of a management team, for instance, is something we think is really important. ESG characteristics is, we think that fits in with the quality focus. I think other things, your sustainable competitive advantages. We particularly like companies where you can get some revenue visibility, companies that aren't going to let you down. Sometimes you can find that more in certain types of businesses where they have really long-term contracts. They might have recurring revenue, for instance, if someone has like software as a service. But I think you find it in other businesses just through, you know, sticky relationships with customers, with supply chains, things like that. The other way, sorry, I should have mentioned, I guess, is that we also have a stock screening tool that we use, and quality as well as growth and momentum are all parts of that screening tool, which is called the Matrix.
Lovely. Thank you. So I'd like to move on now, Abby, if we may, and look at the themes within the trust. Of course, at the top, there's UK smaller companies, but it'd be good to go down another layer, another step, and look at some of the key things. You mentioned SaaS businesses there, which are particularly interesting. So it'd be good if you could give us a flavour of some of the companies there and the sectors and the themes that you're trying to pick up on within the trust. And then, of course, then looking forward from this point forward, you're looking at the opportunities and challenges going forward for UK smaller companies. What do you see on the horizon for the sector?
Okay, so if we think about the holdings, I think we go through periods where there are, you know, quite strong themes if we look at the drivers of companies. And I think there are other times where actually it's really quite diverse. And it feels like we're in that sort of period at the moment. So I think there's sort of less dominant themes in the portfolio. I think one of the really interesting things about quality growth momentum is that we do find those businesses across all sorts of sectors. So, you know, we don't screen out any sectors. There are some sectors which maybe naturally play a bit more towards that or away from it. So, for instance, historically, we've struggled more to find stocks in areas like resources, for instance, things like any biotech elements. We tend to struggle with some of the quality, the visibility. You know, often these sort of companies in those two sectors have somewhat binary outcomes. But really, actually, across the rest of the portfolio, I think it's very diverse at the moment. And I think that's quite a healthy place to be. We probably have lightened somewhat in some of the technology stocks and some of the media stocks, which have had very strong periods through that sort of COVID period of 2020 and beyond, but where perhaps their growth rates are slowing a little bit, their momentum in earnings is easing, and actually on a relative basis, you know, we're seeing strength from other sectors come through. I think often as well, we don't like to think about sectors too much because you can have, you know, a handful of stocks in the same sector, but which all have very, very different stock-specific drivers, particularly when you look at, you know, some of the industrial stocks or support services where they're really, really diverse in nature.
That's really interesting because that really plays into that bottom-up theme that you outlined. And one thing that I note, Abby, with the trust, it does have a yield of about 2%. Of course, it's a growth trust, so not a massive yield, but it is a material yield for a growth trust. Is a dividend important when you're looking at a company, or is it simply a byproduct of the quality of the companies that you're looking at?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at a lot of businesses in the UK smaller company space, and when we say the UK smaller companies, our addressable market we think of, and if we look at our benchmark, is the numerous smaller companies, ex-investment trusts, including AIM. And that's just to give people a bit of reference, that probably includes, it only rebalances once a year in January. It typically includes the sort of bottom half of FTSE 250 plus FTSE small cap and the AIM stocks. Yeah, we find that actually a lot of them pay, you know, a decent yield, depending on where they are in their maturity cycle, perhaps, their balance sheet, their cash generation, their own investment requirements and desires. They do tend to pay yields. And I think, you know, some of the quality focus in the portfolio probably definitely pulls you towards some of those dividend payers. But saying that, we do absolutely have some stocks in the portfolio which do not pay dividends, and that is not a problem. So it's kind of a balanced outcome across the portfolio. We're not targeting a certain yield. What we do focus on is we believe that, you know, as a growth investor, we're looking at earnings growth, and typically we would think as a portfolio that should be aligned with dividend growth from our businesses. So, you know, I think if you look at the dividend track record that we've been able to pay out, it's been, you know, very solid growth over the long term. We paid a flat dividend in COVID, and, you know, we have had some additional cover we've been able to use to deploy when we need that. But really, the dividend is somewhat secondary in terms of this is a growth-focused trust.
Thank you. So I want to address the discount, because looking at here, it's around 12% from looking this morning. And there's, of course, discounts and deeper discounts than there have been historically across the entire investment trust universe. It's not just this trust or the smaller companies. So, Abby, what do you see as the key drivers for a narrowing in this discount? And is that likely to coincide with a revaluation of UK small caps?
Yeah, I mean, the discount has definitely been something that has been frustrating, not just for us, but obviously for the board, but, you know, the whole investment trust market over the last, you know, couple of years. So, you know, our discount has been as wide as maybe 14%. It had narrowed into around 10%, and then it's come off a little bit again. You know, what do we need? We need demand for buying of shares, essentially. You know, that is what closes the discount. So if we look, I think one of the challenges with the discount is actually, you know, we've been pretty pleased with performance over the last 12 months on both an absolute and a relative basis. So, you know, we feel we and the market are doing what we can to attract investors into this space. I think one of the interesting things about investment trusts actually is that also they can appeal to overseas buyers. Sometimes that is not the case with open-ended OEIC vehicles, which sometimes overseas investors struggle to purchase. So there is that appeal potential of the investment trusts. But really it is about sort of supply and demand of shares. You know, we've had an ongoing buyback as well to try and support that discount. But the whole investment trust sector really would like to see discounts narrow. So we have seen a lot more interest towards UK smaller companies in, I would say, the past 6 months. If you look, sometimes it's actually easier to see this in if you look at the sort of open-ended space in UK small cap. But although there's been a lot of interest from clients, it doesn't feel like there's been a lot of flows into the space. You know, I think we've started to see that improve, and I think that should hopefully align with also, you know, share buying in investment trusts, which can narrow that discount.
Thank you. So I now want to touch on a couple of points that may drive that buying in investment trusts that you mentioned there, Abby. And the first is interest rates. Of course, interest rates have been associated with the lowly valuations that we see in smaller companies. So for you as a manager, you know, first of all, how much are you looking forward to a UK interest rate cut? And do you feel that will be a key driver of small caps going forward for the rest of this year when it comes, and if it comes in the coming months, as some commentators are predicting?
So we have thought that interest rate cuts would be a positive driver for UK markets as a whole and for small cap relative to large cap. And, you know, we've looked at history and very much have the data that supports that view. What we did say is we didn't think it was a necessity. You know, we thought the markets could do well without that. And actually now looking back, I think we've been proved right in that. So, you know, UK markets have been really quite strong and consistently solid actually since, you know, October 2023. And that's been without interest rate cuts. And actually it's even more so than that. It's been with the expectations of interest rates cuts being pushed out. So I think absolutely, look, markets didn't need that. I think valuations were so low, you know, companies were actually reporting quite well. Earnings growth is really quite attractive in the UK small cap space. And I think the M&A activity that we've seen in terms of bids for UK companies has been really important actually in terms of underlining to investors, look, if you know, UK market isn't going to be re-rated by, you know, typical investors buying shares, it will be re-rated by acquirees of these businesses seeing the value in those. So look, we still look forward to interest rate cuts. We think it will be a positive. but you know, it certainly hasn't been a binary outcome in terms of necessity. The other thing I guess we see now is, I mean, we see a place where, you know, quite possibly UK interest rate cuts get started before the US, which if we'd been talking a year ago, maybe wouldn't have been the expectation. You know, I think inflation now looks at very manageable levels in the UK, which has been great to see. And with the sort of political situations going on everywhere almost this year, you know, we're kind of past that point in the UK, but not in the US, and that actually might impact that timing.
So you mentioned there politics, and that takes us very nicely into the next point here. And it is, of course, Abby, the new Labour government coming to power very recently. You know, if you look historically, you know, markets can sometimes have a negative reaction to a Labour government. We haven't had that this time round. But when you're looking at the small cap space and companies that you're analysing, you know, it's very early days, but do you see any early signs of policy from the Labour government creating any opportunities that you'd like to act on within the portfolio?
Yeah, I think the election period was really interesting because in the run-up to the election and through the election and the outcome, it was interesting how little markets cared. And I think that was actually a positive. When we look at the policy, you know, outlook, I think There's not much specific that we would look to act on at the moment. I think there's things that we need to be aware of. So, for instance, I think some of the potential changes that we might see in minimum wage elements could be challenging for some sectors. They've dealt with this before, I'm sure they will, but definitely something to be aware of. You know, I think some of the pension changes that we might see are definitely worthy of thinking of from a few angles. Actually, one stock we do hold is XPS Pensions, and typically any change is good change for them in the pension industry. I guess other things maybe, you know, a bit around housing. There's obviously a lot of discussion around the necessity for more new housing in the UK. Actually, the house builder that we favour at the moment is Cairn Homes, which is an Irish house builder, which I'm happy to talk about a bit more later why we sort of have a preference for that. I think the main things I'd be looking for from the government is really around all the policy action that we would sort of hope happens in the UK, and we're definitely starting to see momentum in. So, you know, anything that can be done to make UK markets more attractive for companies to list in, if we can sort of loosen regulation in any way which assists that. I think one of the interesting things that's been discussed is potential changes in stamp duty, and particularly, can we do anything to drive a bit more of that allocation of, specifically, I guess, pension fund investment back towards domestic UK markets, where, you know, as has been well documented, we are really at all-time lows now.
Great. Thank you, Abby. And you mentioned Cairn Homes, and I would like now, if we may, to discuss some of the individual names. It'd be good for listeners to get a flavour of some of the companies that you hold within the portfolio. And I think, as you mentioned, Cairn Homes, that would be a good place to start. What makes you look at Cairn Homes over some of the other house builders that are listed here in London in the small cap area?
Okay. So, I mean, Cairn Homes is probably one of the stocks in the portfolio that I would say I'm most excited about currently. Actually, I put another housing-related stock in that bucket, which would be Mortgage Advice Bureau, which is UK-focused. So, you know, we did some work a while back looking at all the UK-listed house builders, and actually, you know, the one which stood out to us was Cairn Homes, and it has been in quite a different situation in recent years than the UK. So Cairn Homes is Irish, is the biggest house builder in Ireland. It's dual listed, just so people know. So it's dual listed in Ireland and London. And it's really mostly Greater Dublin area focused. And I think if we look partially, I mean, you talked about that, what sort of government support elements there are. I mean, there's a lot of discussion and headlines from Labour government about, you know, the need to and desire to support house building in the UK, you know, but they actually budget-wise are quite constrained in what they can do in many things. Ireland has been in quite a different situation, so they've been in a much healthier budget surplus situation where they really have been able to support house building. And what we see is that Cairn Homes, as the largest player, is actually the one that, you know, is most obvious for them to work with. So, you know, we're seeing Cairn, this is a business which was set up years ago after the GFC and has a really strong land bank. We're now seeing them really drive volume growth across their sites. And you know, these are huge developments, which gives long-term visibility. It allows them to work really well with their employee base, which they've grown and supported. They've worked a lot with their supply base and contractors. Really attractive returns, we think. Some of the elements, and I think this is important and a differential versus a lot of the UK ones, is, you know, high attractive returns, but also they're actually getting even forward funding elements from the Irish government. So there's a lot of support there that helps your balance sheet, to working capital, it helps, it still produces really good margins. And a lot of the actual developments as well, and the end product, does go into government-supported schemes too. So that's one which we see, you know, has, I talked earlier about liking companies with visibility. We think there's a really good visibility of them continuing to drive growth through, you know, additional volumes at high returns, attractive margins.
Thank you. So are there any other companies? I think it would be good, actually, if we could go into a little bit more detail with some of the holdings. You know, maybe some holdings that you have there to give an idea of the diversity throughout the portfolio. And then maybe if you could bring in any recent additions or disposals in the portfolio to give people an idea of where you're looking at the moment.
Okay, yeah, no problem. So, I mean, maybe I'll just pick out a few of the holdings and then I could talk about some new stocks and some.
Please do. Fantastic.
So, you know, if I look at some of the biggest holdings in the portfolio, we've got things like Hill & Smith, which is predominantly a sort of US infrastructure play within industrials. JTC, which is the fund administration business, you know, huge visibility in that business, really, really consistent, good organic growth and acquisitive growth. So they've really increased their addressable market. I mentioned briefly, you know, XPS Pensions. So that's been a newer stock for us, but one which we've really had the conviction to add consistently to, and it's now sort of one of the bigger holdings in the portfolio. We have some food-related stocks as well. So we've got things like Cranswick PLC, which is a pork and chicken producer in the UK. And then also a more global-focused food stock in Hilton Food Group, which really partners with retailers globally in terms of being the expert in sourcing, producing and packaging product. Their key focus areas are beef and fish. Then some really different things. So something like 4imprint, which is a business which does promotional products predominantly in the US. So you know, when you get your free water bottle, tote bag, perhaps t-shirt, which has been labeled by a business, that might well be done by 4imprint, but actually it's a really, really fragmented market. So, you know, even as the market leader, they've still got a low single digit percentage market share in the US. Also, I think, you know, when you talk about quality growth momentum, I think it often surprises people some of the things that perhaps we do hold, because, you know, they might not think they naturally fit into that bucket. And one which I often get a bit of pushback on is Hollywood Bowl, which we've owned for many years. But people sort of say, well, Tenpin Bowling, you know, how is that a growth business? And really, you know, the strength in that business is around the management team. So, you know, I talked about those quality aspects you're looking for. And how they've driven operationally that business and the returns they get on new site openings, on refurbishments. And they've taken a low risk entry into the Canadian market, which really elongates that investment case. And you know, we love things like that because, you know, when we are thinking about a new stock, we tend to think about sort of a 3 to 5 year time horizon. But often, you know, we own these companies for much longer than that. And sort of expanding into adjacent markets is one of the ways that those investment cases often elongate.
To finish off now, Abby, you did mention a couple of companies that excite you? And it's always a question that we like to ask at the end of a podcast. Some people say they don't have any favourites or companies that excite them the most. They like all companies, but I do like to ask the question, you know, which holdings? Of course, you mentioned Cairn Homes there, but are there any other particular holdings that are exciting you at the moment that you're looking forward to strong progress over the coming period from?
Yeah, so maybe I could pick out briefly a few others that I think are really interesting at the moment. Actually, in the housing space we spoke about, I would pull out Mortgage Advice Bureau, which is one that we've held for a long time. We sort of reduced our exposure during a more tough period for them, and we've been increasing that again. And I think if I look as well at, you know, why you might own that relative to a UK house builder, I really like the growth aspect that we can get from Mortgage Advice Bureau. I think that actually for house builders to grow, it takes many years often because you need planning and then you need to build out those sites. Mortgage Advice Bureau, I think, can be earlier cycle in that recovery period. And importantly, isn't dependent on just new build housing or even on actually the people moving, because there's a lot of remortgage activity needs to come in that space. We like their market position. So high market share is a really attractive quality dynamic to us. And also they can grow as well by taking on more advisors. So that's one we're quite excited about. I'd also pull out maybe one recent IPO that we did, which is a company called Raspberry Pi, which has been described as a power-packed fruit. We are not dependent on IPOs, but we absolutely do look at them and we take part in some of them. And Raspberry Pi, I think, is a really, really unique asset in the UK. It is a IT hardware business, but also with software integrated. And it focuses on single board computing. So, you know, often you will never know that you've used a Raspberry Pi, but it will be embedded in all sorts of elements that you see. Perhaps, you know, in the lift that you've used at work today might be powered by Raspberry Pi. For instance, they are used in automation in factories, everything. So about 70% of their exposure is now in industrial. This is a business which actually started in the educational and enthusiast market, and that still represents 30% of their revenue and is growing. But you know, I think the most attractive growth will come from them continuing to take market share in the industrial space. And you know, they develop new product. They also keep pricing low. This is all produced in the UK, interestingly, in Wales. And maybe just one more I'll mention would be Premier Foods, which is a newer addition to the portfolio. And this is maybe something slightly different for us because this has been a challenged business historically. And you know, if people know Premier Foods from the past, they probably have memories of the troubles that it's had. But we really think that it is through those now. And one of the aspects actually that's helping them come up is they've been sort of crippled by the pension situation that they've been in terms of continuing to have to fund that. It's in a much healthier situation now. And what that's allowing them to do is take that strong cash generation and actually reinvest it in the business. So you know, we think there's a particularly impressive management team now at the helm of this business. You know, we've focused a lot on new product development from them, on really the strength of the brands that they have as well, and the longevity, but also how they can utilize those across different regions. So we've seen this business now be able to do acquisitions, which really have not been a part of the investment case before. So one that people might know from their cupboards at home would be Spice Tailor. And this is a particularly interesting product range that they continue to innovate and can roll out across different geographies as well. I think this business will be more global going forwards than it has been.
That's great. Fascinating, Abby. Thank you very much. Just a quick note to listeners, do check out the notes to this podcast because there'll be a link through to the Aberdeen UK Smaller Companies Growth Trust website where you'll be able to find some more information and really delve down into those holdings and of course look at the latest fact sheets and such. So Abby, thank you very much for being with us today.
No, thank you so much for having me.
And thank you very much to everyone for listening. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember all investment involves risk.